This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And we are so happy that we are now on two FM stations. So whether you're listening on AM or FM, I hope that you will contact me if you have a writer, an author that you want me to interview. I have connections to all the publicists up there in New York City. So if you have a particular writer that you want me to interview, send me an email at patsy.radio.com, and I will be happy to try to get that author in. And if I do, and if you are in the area and you want to come in the studio and ask your favorite author some questions, I will invite you to come to the studio. So it can be lots of fun, and I'm always interested in finding new writers. I read a lot, and I get, if anybody's watching on the internet, the podcast, you can see I have more books. Every day I get tons of books. My mailman is, boy, he's going to earn his Christmas bonus this year because he's bringing me books all the time. So, but it's fun and I love it. And, I want to ask all of you to just write me. And, also I've been very happy. I had, I mentioned last week that if, you had a particular type of book that you wanted, and if I had an extra copy, because I have thousands of books, I would be happy to share them with you. And so if you have a type of book that you like, I have cozy mysteries and sci-fi and all sorts of books. So just send me an email at patsy.radio@gmail.com. And you can go to my website, which is www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and listen to my archives of some of your favorite writers. Now, I'm very happy today. I have in the studio with me an author. And his name is, I have to say, J.S. Lamb first, because that's, if you're going to do a search on Amazon, that's how you find him. Because I typed in his name, Jim Lamb, and I didn't find it. And I thought, oh, I know he wrote that book. And it's called Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales, How I Survived Vietnam and Kept My Sense of Humor. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the studio.
Good morning, and I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, it's so nice to have you. And there's so much I want to talk to you about. You know, you are sort of the epitome of what I mention quite often, that there's a story in everybody, and it's just the fun thing to get it out there and work on it. And you did that. Now, you know, this book is a small book, a memoir of sorts, just these little tales, which I think are fun and interesting to read. And so how... Let's talk first about the book, and then we'll talk about some of your other interesting things that you have gone through. So Orange Socks. I suppose we should start with that. How did you decide on that title, too? Because I know you had a different title to start with.
For years, I called it Enchanted War, because Vietnam is sort of a surreal experience. There were times I felt like that was home and the United States was just some faraway fantasy land. And so the gist of it was is writing these little stories that happened, everyday stories that had became enchanting moments because of the fact they were in a war zone. The one that jumps out as I speak to you is I went to watch Kelly's Heroes, which was with Clint Eastwood, at the admin building in Da Nang. And I'm watching it, and it just hit me. I said, why am I watching a war movie? In the middle of a war. And so I just walked out. And it turns out when I walked out, there was a bomb attack, rocket attack. So I ran to the safest place I could find, and it was only two or three of us there. And it turned out the people watching the movie did not hear the bombs because it happened during an attack in the movie. And I thought, well, this is like the perfect parable for Vietnam. You go to a movie, And you walk out, you say, those are some of the best sound effects I've ever heard. And so I just, that, and that became a story and other little stories. But the Orange Sox was the one that family and friends said, that's your best story. And they talked me into changing the name from Enchanted War to Orange Sox.
Well, I think it's a better title because Enchanted, I don't know, that doesn't, when you think about Vietnam, it's more like a horror story than anything to do with enchantment. But so tell us about this Orange Sox story, because I think that's so cute.
Well, I'm one of those people, everybody learns it.
You're a little troublemaker.
We all learn at a different rate, and I must have been very slow for the Navy because I was not used to structure. I had a creative tent. I used to like to write. I played guitar. I played bass. And I was in some plays in high school and college. So this is not the perfect place to be in a very structured environment. So one of the things that's big in the Navy is inspections. So you have to get every little piece right, and if you don't, bad things happen. And I remember when I was in boot camp, and I was trying. I understand this would not be funny, except I was trying to do the right thing. So as they're going, there were about 80 of us in the barracks, and the drill instructor's coming down row by row, and he gets to mine, and he looks at it, and apparently mine was particularly bad. Took all the nicely folded and clean clothes I had, threw them on the floor, stomped on them, kicked them around. I had to start from scratch. Well, this can be a motivating factor because you don't ever want to go through that again. So for the first 3.5 years in the Navy, I would get one thing right. Like I'd get my brass belt buckle perfect, but then they would ding me for my shoes. I'd get my shoes right, my belt buckle right, but then they said my hair was too long. And it was for 3.5 years. I'm just trying to juggle this around, trying to get like top A grade, and until one day, a fellow sailor took out this bag with this pristine hat and this beautiful belt buckle and shoes that were like glass. And I said, "What are those?" He said, "This is my inspection gear. I wear this for inspections." And then he said something that just was a slap in the face. He says, "You don't think I would go to inspection wearing the same clothes I do when I go to work?" And I went, "Well, I didn't get the memo on that." So what I did over the next few months is very carefully craft all these little things I was getting in trouble with. I had a belt buckle that just could bring down an airplane from the shine. I hired a young Japanese man to spend, I paid $2 or $3, but he made the perfect shoes for me, and they were new shoes to start with. And then with my hat, I think I used starch and whitening and had it in such a way that it was almost a weapon. So I walked into inspections, and I was invisible. I looked like everybody else. So then I got this idea, and this was devious, and I'm really embarrassed and ashamed to say how much I enjoyed it. I went to the biggest inspection of the year, dressed as perfect as you could be dressed, but I wore orange socks underneath my trousers. Now, remember, in the Navy, you have bell bottoms, and they go down to the ground, so nobody can see the orange socks. But as the captain marches by me in this huge hangar with hundreds of sailors on either side, as his entourage inspects me and moves on, I pick up my pants, I pull them up so everybody on the other side of the hangar can see my orange socks, and this wave of laughter rings through and echoes. And, of course, everybody stops trying to figure out where it is. By that time, I've dropped my bell bottoms down to cover my socks, and I said that was the high point of my 4 years in the Navy.
Well, you are a mischievous little devil, aren't you?
I could be at the same time.
I think so. I think it's a delightful story. It's if you don't write a movie about it, I think maybe I'll steal it and put it in a movie one day because it's so cute. It's adorable.
Well, I always envision it as sort of a MASH thing where all these little incidents happen and then try to tie them in all the way, because when I tell people Enchanted, and before I renamed it, and they thought, well, Enchanted is happy. I said, no, I said some enchantments are far less than happy.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to live through the curse, and you have to take down the dragon, and you have to go through the pillars of whatever to get to the other side and have a victory. And what it turned out for me is finally that moment where I felt like I could fit in and still be my own person, that was the Orange Sox moment. I think we all have that. We have to keep some little piece for ourselves. We can conform and work together and work in a community and work with family. But you just want one little corner that this is where I want to hide.
Well, you know, as I said, this is the book is just one. It's one little short vignette after another.
Yes.
And each of them has its own specialness. And I liked actually the story about Mount Fuji. I had never thought of it in about climbing Mount Fuji, and so it was fun to hear how you climbed Mount Fuji.
The Mount Fuji, and I'm doing this from memory. I said a wise man climbs Mount Fuji once, but a fool wants to go back and do it again, or something like that. And I'm not much of an outside person, and my friends literally dragged me to do this Mount Fuji thing, which you can do in a day, but it took us two, because I think I was sort of the caboose they were dragging up. And there were moments where it was funny, like there's nothing at the top of Mount Fuji that's not brought up there on somebody's back. And I'm struggling to go up. Of course, I was smoking 2 or 3 packs a day at the time. And there was a very small, wiry Japanese woman with the largest backpack I've seen in my life. And she zipped past me like a race car and embarrassed me to no end. And I just always hope that she was not looking at me at the time she passed me up, because she just showed that sort of the strength of the Japanese culture, which is you just set your focus on something and do it. So we stopped halfway. And we were in sort of an overnight place. And the cool thing is you get these little sticks. And each stop along the way, they put a little sort of like a tattoo on it, so you can show your journey. And in this particular spot where we spent the night, there was a fire there. And I just everyone else had gone to sleep. And the fire just was down to the coals. And I just had this sense of both joy and terror, because this was a new experience for me. And I don't like to go out much, but in going out, I just discovered something that I hadn't before. And when I got to the top of Mount Fuji, the air is so clear, and it was a day where you could really see forever. And I remember breathing that cold air just like it was icicles going into my lungs. And it was one of the most unforgettable experiences I've ever had. And yet I fought tooth and nail not to go. So that's sort of like my own little contradiction of life is, don't take me anywhere, let me alone. And yet when you take me somewhere, I'm like a child finding new things.
Well, I think it's delightful that you've put these stories down. And one of the things I like, of course, at the end of your book, you encourage other people, and particularly vets, mm-hmm. to write. Just write it down. Keep these memories alive somehow.
Well, the thing I don't think people realize, and I've since bumped into quite a few veterans since then, and I hope to bump into more, even if they only have a page, even if they write in set in fragments and they have to get someone else to type it up, this is going to be treasure to a family. My dad was in World War II, did not share many stories, just 2 or 3. Yet those, to me, are just like things in a gold box. There's nothing more precious to me. Now, admittedly, since my background is writing, I have a string of pearls. At least I hope they're pearls. But what surprised me in it is that not everyone is drawn to the same little vignette. You mentioned Mount Fuji. My daughter-in-law read it and said, you know, I was going to wait till I retired to go places, but after reading this, I just thought I want to make memories now. And the rest of the book didn't quite catch her. Other people come up to Orange Socks particularly, and they'll get that sense of, yes, I know what that's like. I know what it's like to say, I really am me. I can't show you, but I'm here. But other stories will affect people different ways, and that's one of the joys for me in not just writing it, but getting feedback about it.
Well, see, he said the word joy, which is why I named this program Joy on Paper, because you do get this sense of joy when you get these stories down, when you get your ideas down. It is so fulfilling, and it really, and to know also that you're sharing the joy, that you're, somebody's going to read this, and as you said, each in your case, each story touches a different note in a person. Mm-hmm. And you got the idea to write it like this, that you're going to write these little vignettes, and you put it together, somebody encouraged you to do this?
Yes, There was never intent to write a book. If I'd have known I was going to write a book, I'd have taken notes. but I had little stories I would tell people. So, for example, I played in a great little jazz band down in Sarasota called Direct Current. We played a lot of art community type events, art shows, crafts, whatnot. And during practice, when something would go wrong and they'd be working on the speakers or the amplifiers, I would tell a little story just to kind of fill in the gap. And a friend of mine, Sam Harris, who was the husband of the keyboard player, who was really our technician and great sound guy, he kept pestering me to write these down. I said, nobody cares, Sam. He said, they're great little stories. So he pestered me for years, and then finally when I retired, I got a notebook about an inch and a half thick, just big enough to fit in my pocket. And if I was standing in line somewhere, or I was at the library, I was out to lunch, and I had an idea, I would just write a word or two. Because what I was trying to do is jog back all those memories. And then when I filled that book up, I went back and typed it out, triple spaced. And then I took, I think it was two or three colors of pens, and wrote down, this is a good idea, expand on this one. And then once I had done that, I went back and story by story wrote them. I did not write them in the sequence they happened. In fact, when I got to the end, I had middle, and no beginning or end to the story. And my son, who is a very bright young man, convinced me to sit down and very painstakingly reread everything and sequence it as best I could, and then write a beginning and an end, which I did. And the ending, not to give anything away, but it was the moment my brother took me to D.C., and I went to the Vietnam Wall, which I don't know if it can move, if it moves everybody. I'm sure it moves every veteran. And when you take your fingers and rub them across those names, the electricity, the emotion.
It is amazing. Powerful. It is absolutely amazing. I have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to talk to you about the cover to your book, because that's a fascinating story. And we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660, or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side, on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Jim Lamb, who wrote Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales. And it's so nice to have you here in the studio, Jim, because I want to talk to you about your book cover.
Well, I should to be transparent, I was an associate graphics editor at the Tribune for several years, and then did page design there and did page design down in Sarasota. So it wasn't quite as daunting as it might have been for someone who was primarily word-oriented, not visually oriented. So I had the experience of working with some of the greatest photographers and artists in the world at those two newspapers. The Tribune, sadly, gone. But they had just an array of artists and photographers who taught me a lot. They won a lot of awards. They came through that grind every day to get the paper out. So I think they cross-pollinated some of their talent on me.
Well, you know, I, you know, they say don't judge a book by its cover, but people do judge a book by its cover. And I was, I found when I looked at your book, I liked the cover. I thought it was great. And, you know, it was for you a process, right?
It took me over 2 months. It looked so simple. And I went through so many iterations. Originally, I started off with a drawing of a sailor on the cover and tried to suggest the sailor was me in a cartoon version. And I know you only have 3 to 8 seconds to kind of sell the whole package. And so I began, the editing process is the taking away process, and sometimes it's taking away things that you love. So I got down to where I liked the color, which is sort of a banana lemon. I knew it would pop. And I liked the graphics, I'm sorry, the font I chose for the cover, but I needed something in the middle. And finally, to hit as simple but say as much as I could, I used a balloon text block like you would in a cartoon or a Sunday comic. And then I used a font specifically designed for Sunday comics called Comic. And so what I wanted to convey in a few seconds with the color to sort of smack and get their attention, the title, Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales, and then inside the text balloon, how I survived Vietnam with my sense of humor. But with the signal I was sending graphically was that this is going to be funny. Because of the text balloon and the font of the text, it should immediately register most people, this is something funny, without saying it, and then the words kind of help convey the same thing.
Well, I think you did a great job. You know, for many authors, independent authors, this is always one of the most difficult things of coming out with a cover. First of all, you have to be so careful that you don't copy anybody. Mm-hmm. And I have seen so many independent writers who have written thrillers, and if I see one more with a shadow of a gun, of a man holding a gun, I mean, this has been used over and over and over, and I'll go crazy if one more author uses that. So I found your both the color, the bright color, and then that bubble, the speech bubble, in this context because of that it is a humorous book, was actually perfect. And I'm not sure that a graphic artist could have done it better because it really captured the essence of the book. And, you know, a few weeks ago I had Paul Buckley on, and he is the art director for Penguin Books. And they just came out with a book called Classic Penguins from Cover to Cover. And I recommend this to all independent authors that you must have this book by your side. One, because the covers really are inspirational. And in this book, they have the illustrators talk about why certain covers work and why they might have started off with some other idea, much like you did. You started off with the idea of a sailor, and then that in a quick, as you said, in a few seconds, that might not tell the story of what you or capture the essence of what you're trying to accomplish. And so that's why this book by Penguin called Cover to Cover, Penguin Classics, is such a perfect read for independent authors because it shows you the covers that work, and Penguin certainly knows award-winning covers. And but as I looked at your cover, and you know, I had looked at your cover before I talked to Paul, and then after I talked to Paul, I went back and I'm looking at your cover and compared it to the ones in this Classic Penguins, and you know, you hold up.
Thank you.
And which is saying a lot, because quite often I find that the independent covers just, I mean, you can tell the difference. For you, it took me a little while. I said, oh, I think, you know, somebody did a good job here. And so that you did it yourself, I think it's fantastic.
Well, I appreciate that. I should say I was born an hour and a half from where Andy Warhol lived. So maybe... Oh. That proximity.
Okay, maybe something floating in the air
yes.
there caught you because it really, as I said, and I cannot think of another independent author that I've seen such a nice cover lately. Because
well, thank
it
you.
Really is, it's super. You did a great job.
Well, that and the editing. I am a chronic editor. I'm not a bad writer. You have to be the toughest editor you can be when you edit your own stuff. And it is, that's where the pain is. The joy is in the writing. But I think you give birth to the baby with the editing. And even then, I had two other editors read it for me, and then I paid an editor to edit it. So it went through quite a process because I felt like I owed it to the writer, the reader, to either enjoy the book or not based on the content, not on grammatical errors or other things.
Exactly, because grammatical errors can really turn a reader off.
Fast.
And I've seen even some very, very big authors whose books have been published by major publishing houses, and it is very distracting when you have typos or when you have grammatical errors, particularly tenses of verbs. Mm. When you switch them around back and forth, it drives me crazy. Mm. And it shouldn't happen, certainly from a major publishing house. Mm. and independent authors, as you said, even though you worked for, 15 years as an editor?
Oh, yeah.
So you still needed to get an editor.
Yeah, so, I used to tell people, reporters need editors, and when editors write, they need editors even more.
So now that you finished this book, I, as I'm reading, as I said, from my point of view, because I write scripts, I see things visually. So for me, that's the opening scene in The Orange Sox is the opening scene in my movie that I'm writing for you. So I'm wondering, are you going to expand on this? Have you thought about turning it into a novel?
I tell you what I thought about it, because my son is prodding me. My next book he wants to be, and we've agreed on the title, Dad and Me, which is sort of the build-up to Orange Sox in this respect. My dad was an eighth grade guy, worked in the mines. His dad worked in the mines. Then he went into construction. And so I'm thinking when he had his oldest son, and I'm named Jim after him, he thought he was going to get a son that was just a fulfillment of all the great talents he had. And then and before there were geeks and nerds, I don't know what they called them in the 50s, he had me instead. So he would try to teach me something and get very frustrated and then say, why don't you just go in a corner and read a book, which, of course, was not a punishment to me. And so it was just very strange relationships. And it wasn't that there wasn't love there. It's just that – and I have three brothers who – one's a construction superintendent for commercial. One was who died 5 years ago, was a mechanic. And the third one put in a cabinet. Custom kitchen cabinets, which is just extraordinarily fine work to do in terms of doing it. And then you get me, the reader. and yet when I moved to Florida, I went back to school, I got my degree, and I worked for the Tampa Tribune, my dad got the paper and made a point of reading my stories every day, which I cannot tell you that when he died, that was one of the things that just meant so much. And so my son wants me to tell the tale of that sort of peculiar, strained relationship between sort of a John Wayne and his son's a Woody Allen, and how do either one of them survive that? So I made some notes on that. But what I want to publish before that is a book of poetry, not poetry in the very airy breezy sense, but more a little more edgier, taken from the standpoint as a journalist would write them, so that there's a lot of facts and imagery in there. Rather than just feelings.
Well, that sounds interesting. Because it's funny. There is a market for poetry, and there are people who really appreciate it. And I was talking to Eloisa James, who is a best-selling author, and she writes historical romances. But she was so surprised that I knew that her father is Robert Bly, the famous poet from Minnesota. Mm. I'm a Youper from Upper Peninsula, Michigan. And so I had been aware of her father for many years, long before I ever heard about her, actually. And I just love his poetry. And for anyone who wants to hear a poet read their poetry, it's available on YouTube. Mm. And first of all, he has this magnificent voice. And but he really tells a story in his poetry, and that's what I like. You come away learning something and knowing something, and so I think that's a great thing for you to do.
Well, one I recently done, I mentioned because it's very personal. I was not the most mechanical kid, but I was a Boy Scout. Now I was a tenderfoot for almost 4 years, whatever the record was in my camp.
Oh, okay, that's a
pretty. But I enjoyed being around the guys that really knew how to do stuff, and there weren't many things I could do, but I was able to go out and bring corn to the deer and what they call salt lick blocks, because the deer, you know, during the in the winter in Pennsylvania, there's a lot of snow, not much food, and it just struck me one day. What could that be? A sort of a poem. I mean, I started off with we carried corn to the deer, and that's all I had. And I worked on it and developed it, and wrote down everything I could think of. It was walking through the mist. I called it the sumptuous mist, which I would like to take credit for, but I had typed in temptuous, and spell check changed it to sumptuous, and I said that's actually quite good. But it was the idea of this group of boys having fun and then talking about great adventures and at the same time doing something helpful for the deer in the wintertime. And I got to the end, I was just so happy, and I said, that's what I want to convey, is the kind of things that I felt as a youngster when it wouldn't have even occurred to me to write poetry, because if I had, I'm sure one of my uncles would have smacked me down for even trying.
Well, I think it's wonderful, and it's funny, we're having next Wednesday, we're having a grand opening of the Book Nook, Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. And in the fall, we're going to have author events, and you might want to come and read some of your poetry, because that's what the type of thing we're looking for.
That sounds like a safe environment. I don't think I'd try it at a family reunion.
Well, I think it's going to be great. Look, I have to take another quick break, and then when we come back, I want to talk to you about entering writing contests, because a lot of my listeners want to know what to do. Okay, we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Branvik, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side, on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
Larson & Larson is a proud sponsor of Joy on Paper. Our law firm has the experience and knowledge to help you protect your valuable intellectual property. From trademark, copyright, and patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements, the attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, are here to advise you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com. That's Larson & Larson, your intellectual property attorneys.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest in the studio, Jim Lamb, who wrote Orange Socks and other colorful tales. And in a minute, we're going to talk to him about entering a writing contest. But meanwhile, before I do that, I want you to tell one more story from your book. Tell the Three Stooges one.
Of the Three Stooges. I'm trying to think which.
This always happens.
You're so good at this.
I have this ability. I read books, and it's funny. A while back, this happens all the time. I'm reading a book, or I'm thinking of something, and then suddenly I remember not only what book I read something in. I can go back and I can find the exact page. So this always surprises some of these famous authors who have written 57 books, and I know their books better than they do. Okay, Three Stooges. A little injury, and
I'm going to guess it's the injury when I'm walking through the barracks.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do this.
Because I have several injuries.
I think this little he was a mischievous guy. Did they have a nickname for you?
No, but in college they called me back in the '60s the infamous Jim Lamb, which it took me a long time to live down because I was I played in a jug band group. A rock group. I was a social director for the college, and I didn't fit into any mold.
Well, how about playing the piano? Does that jog your memory?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, I remember this. Okay, thank you.
Good.
A lot of this has to do with the ability to be coordinated or uncoordinated. So I'm walking back to my barracks, and rather than go around one of the abandoned barracks, I walk through it, and sitting in the in the bathroom on the ledge is an old rusty razor, and I looked at it and at the same time you have to visualize this. I have the razor in my right hand. I'm in front of a mirror, and I thought, I wonder if I shave today. So as I'm putting the razor down, I'm lifting my hand up to look at my face, and I slice my fingers, my left hand across the top, and I bled profusely. So. I had to go to the medic. Well, this is not a hospital now. This is just a little hole in the wall with a guy and some medical supplies. So I go in, and he had been sleeping in the back, and I think he had been perhaps drinking the night before or some variation of that. So I come in, and I'm bleeding, and he looks at me, and he's grumpy, and he starts cleaning up my hand and wrapping each finger up in gauze. Well, then I had this flashback to a skit I had seen on the Three Stooges on it had to be in the late 50s, early 60s. And I had been holding this joke in my mind for all these years, thinking, someday in my life, before I die, I will have the moment that I can actually play this joke out in my own life. Thus, as an homage to the Three Stooges, but also kind of building on my own life. So I looked at my hand, it's wrapped up, and I say to the medic, I say, will I be able to play piano? And he said, I don't see why not. And I said, that's funny. I never could before. Which, of course, is the great Three Stooges line. And he said, I should cut your fingers off the rest of the way. So that sort of taught me you can only take humor so long in those situations.
Well, I think it's a cute story. Again, it's, you know, in my mind, it's part of the movie that I'm writing. So, you know, this is fantastic. Well, now let's talk about, I love your story about what you learned from not winning the Writer's Digest contest. Tell us about that.
Yes, first let me tell you, I had planned to win. Okay. And I already spent the money, planned my trip to New York.
Oh, wow.
because my retirement plan has always been either the lottery or the McDonald's scratch-off, you know.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Neither of which have happened yet. So anyway, I did it, and I want to tell you, it is worth it, whether you win or not, because the Writer's Digest is such a class operation. They assign someone to read it, and then they evaluate it, and they send that evaluation back, which is two or three pages. In fact, in the interest of being transparent, I posted that on my website so people could see what it's like to have somebody and with 20 or 30 years editing and or writing and or graphics experience jump into that loop to be vulnerable. And the fear was, well, what if I lose? I thought, well, I can't lose because I entered. And I'm going to learn something in the end. And it was a little tedious filling out the paperwork and doing everything right because you have to make certain deadlines and whatnot. And then you wait, the longest wait in the world, I think it's 3 or 4 months before you find out. But when that evaluation showed up and I looked at it fairly, and they pointed out the good, bad, and the ugly, I said, you know, that's one of the best investments of time I have ever made. And the irony is that if I had had that advice beforehand, I think I would have written the book differently. But then it's sort of a chicken and the egg. You know, if you don't do one, you don't do the other. But put yourself out there, be vulnerable, be transparent, and learn from it. Because I'm going to be 70 in January. Right now I'm taking three courses online, one the history of opera, one about how to write about anything, and third, which is a 20 or 25-hour course on the structure of the sentence. Now, I could be out fishing or golfing, but I love my craft. I want to learn. And the great thing about writing, where the football player has to quit after age 30, I'm going to be writing until I just drift off to sleep and wake up somewhere else.
Well, I just interviewed last month. I interviewed Clive Cussler. I did a two-part interview for his 85th birthday. He's got a new book coming out again in the fall, so I'm going to interview him again. So that is the lovely thing about writing, that you can keep going. And Mary Higgins Clark, who's going to be 89, I think, on Christmas Eve, is going strong too. So that's the fun part about it. So how did they evaluate you finally when you went through it?
I think the thing I'm most proud of is, from an editing standpoint, I graded very high. And because I had, like I said, I had written it.
So you got a five on that.
I got a five on that. And I was thrilled. I think the thing and it's funny because I just listened to your archive, and I want to say it's
Martha Alderson.
Martha Alderson. And I listened to her, your interview with her twice. And to sum up the whole thing that I learned, she said, from the plot whisperer, she said, what some people think writing is, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened. And when I wrote Green Socks, that's exactly what I did. But I realized I did not have the larger arch. I tried to sort of pin a front and end on it, but I did not write it as one long arch. I wrote it with a lot of little pieces, and I think had I been able to build that arch, I think it would have been a stronger story. So I think that was my weakest, and then the other things in between. But I'm so glad I put myself on there, because I'm glad I wrote the book. I'm glad I invested in that competition, and I'm so glad that I feel like I can learn. There's a novel in me somewhere, and I'm going to get it written, and I think that feedback helped me.
Well, that's great. That's exactly what I've been telling everyone since I started the program. There are so many wonderful writing contests. The Writer's Digest one is great. And then San Francisco Writers Convention has opened up their submissions for their contest. This is a good time to enter their contest. The prizes come out during the convention in February next year. And, again, they are just – you're in front of some of the best people in the world in the business, some of the best editors and agents. And – the opportunity to get feedback is wonderful. And so I, as you said, it's a learning experience, and just entering is winning. Mm-hmm. And so I recommend that highly. And then for, you know, people who have something that they really want feedback on, have to pay a lot of money to people to get this type of thing. And when you get, like, in the Writer's Digest, you get a detailed thing of what to look for. And then they talk about things like the structure, the organization, and all of that type of thing. So I think it's great that you did that. That's fantastic. Now let's talk a little bit before I run out of time here. You have a website, and what is the name of it?
JSLstories.com. That's my initials, JSL, then stories.com. And it's primarily, of course, about the book, but because I want particularly veterans to have a reason to come back, I have posted quite a bit of useful information there about where to go for different veterans and different veterans of different wars and different, Army, Navy, Marine Corps, et cetera. And then I also have some whimsical things, like I did some research, spent a couple weeks finding videos of songs popular during the Vietnam era, and I posted them on the page. So I've tried to put some little knick-knack things in there that people could go back either to get, how do I contact the VA about this, or, gee, there was a song we used to play way back when. Of course, the classic song is, we got to get out of this place because we had to and we did.
Well, you know, I'm deeply involved in a project called Forgotten F-105 Warriors, a project to honor all of the F-105 pilots and the ground crews, because they went through Operation Rolling Thunder. So many of them were, the pilots were shot down. Many were killed, and of course, many landed up in the Hanoi Hilton, and sometimes for, you know, years. And I know I had Medal of Honor winner Leo Thorsness on my program, and he had been POW for 8 years, if you can imagine it. And so I think that's fantastic what you've done, is putting up all this information for the vets. And I just want to repeat it again. So it's jslstories.com. And it's a great little website. I like it. You've got a lot of little blog things. And what's this thing? Time spent with cats is never wasted. Who said that? I assume you like cats.
I have a cat named Stormy. I have a history of cats, but Stormy is the latest, and Stormy is the most exquisitely quirky cat I have ever had. When I'm writing, she will sit on my shoulder or on the keyboard or scratch at the mouse as I move it around. And if I get to where I'm not paying attention to her, she jumps up on my chest and bites my chin.
Okay. So that keeps you moving.
Keeps me alert.
So, you know, again, I think you've given some really great advice here to authors. And the biggest thing is that you just have to keep writing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much fun to be able to share this. And I know that I've invited you already to join us at the Miami Avenue Book Nook grand opening in Indian Rocks Beach. And the reason we're having this event, I was so very thankful to Bev Malley, the owner of Miami Avenue Wine Bar, Music and the Arts, because she had this space available, and she so generously has set up the bookshelves to showcase our authors, and a wide variety of books to appeal really to all of the visitors to the beach, because right now there is no place along the beach except a few little places where you can buy paperback books. And it's just so wonderful when, you know, this, as I say, opening the program always a perfect place to read. And we're really hoping for a good turnout on Wednesday. And I hope that you'll get your book in there. And it's available, of course, on your website and on Amazon. And, you know, I'm just thrilled that you came into the studio today.
I'm happy to be here. I had a great time. And I would encourage anyone to go to your website and go through the archive, because talk about some great information and that we can learn from. I know I have already listed the next two or three I'll be listening to.
Well, that's great, because I'm going to be bringing in some more of the top agents, literary agents in New York. And then I have, I'm very thrilled. Yesterday I was talking to Mike Resnick. He is a science fiction writer. He has won more awards than anybody else in the sci-fi area. He's won every award, not once, not twice, sometimes 10 times over. And he's just a fantastic person. And he loves to encourage sci-fi writers, well, all writers, but particularly sci-fi writers. And he's going to come on the program to talk about the writers that he thinks, you know, that sci-fi enthusiasts should read. And so I'm very grateful to him, and I think it'll be September 15th. And as I said at the beginning of the program, I love to find new authors. I read a lot, but it's always amazing. Somebody will come along that I hadn't read, and so it's always a thrill for me. I think one of the biggest thrills recently of somebody who's not famous, but she's making herself famous, is Ashley Royer. And she started by writing on Wattpad. Now, probably you're too not of the generation to write on Wattpad, but it's for younger people who have started writing little things. And she's writing and writing and pretty soon she had 30 million hits.
Wow.
30 million. She's 17 years old. And but it was so delightful to talk to somebody who has gone out there again, just like you entered a contest. She entered and put her things up on Wattpad.
Hmm.
She took a chance. So she didn't know she was going to be so successful. And of course, she just hit it big. Hmm. And that's a fun thing. Now, one thing I just wanted to add to just quickly, I'm going to be talking in a few weeks to several people about book proposals for nonfiction books. Nonfiction books are generally sold by proposal, not by a completed book, unless if you have a book, you know, you can try to get it out there. But generally, you get a contract to write the book. And the most important thing, and this is something just for you to think about before we get to that program, is that when you are making a book proposal and you're writing a book about, let's say, cats, okay? Well, you have to have a heck of a title to get a nonfiction book about cats.
Mm.
And you have to think of a catchy title. It can't be just everything you want to know about cats. You have to come out with a really catchy title. And then the important thing, it's funny, when you're writing the proposal, you have to tell the agent like five other top titles about cats. And you have to say why yours is better than anybody else's. So it's a fun thing to see the process of writing a book proposal. And it can be done, and people get sometimes very nice advances, and they haven't even written the book yet.
Mm.
So it's a fun thing to do. So I'm looking forward to that interview. And that's with Jane Friedman and a few other people who are involved in writing book proposals. And if you haven't read Jane Friedman's website, it's always great to go to her because she has a lot of good advice, too. So just generally speaking, it's been a fun week. I've just had so much fun. I had Sharon Hartley in here on Tuesday. She's a romance author who just recently moved to our area. She's going to be at the Book Nook, and I've told her that she has to be at Beach Babe's Book Blast, which is going to be in November. And it's a romance author's fan fiction event, and they have a fantastic turnout. And we're going to have the organizers of the Beach Babes Book Blast on here in a few weeks to tell us more details about it. But meanwhile, remember, you are the joy in someone's life. So reach out and talk to those people who love you, and just pick up the phone and text or call or hang out or Skype, and be the joy of joys in somebody's life. And so have a great weekend. If you have time, head over to Miami Avenue Wine Bar for live music on tonight. It's jazz, and Friday and Saturday dancing music, and you'll love it. And they have a lot of Vietnam era songs that they play. So you can be dancing there. In the candlelight of Miami Avenue Wine Bar. So have a great weekend, and I look forward to seeing everyone next week. I've got some really exciting interviews coming up, so we'll talk more about it next week. Meanwhile, take care of yourselves, be well, and share the joy. Bye-bye.
WTAN, Clearwater, Tampa Bay. WDCF, Dade City, Tampa Bay. WZHR, Zephyr Hills, Tampa Bay. Listen.